Welcome to the HDFN edition of Rare Disease Advisors Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the HDFN community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. Our guest today is Erin Collins, founder of the Chasing Rainbows Foundation, a nonprofit organization based in the Outer Banks region of North Carolina. Erin's charity is dedicated to helping mothers cope with the loss related to hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn, HDFN, previously known as rhesus disease, as well as other conditions. According to its website, Chasing Rainbows offers compassionate support to mothers and families affected by pregnancy and infant loss by providing education, teaching self-advocacy skills, helping families cope with the loss, and giving hope for subsequent pregnancies. Erin joins us from Melbourne, Australia, where she's currently living with her husband, Trip. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks, Larry. I appreciate you having me.
If you would, please tell us your story, how you started the foundation, and where this all comes from.
I would be more than happy to. It's kind of a long story, but to kind of keep us on time, HDFN, you're usually sensitized by a previous pregnancy, blood transfusion, whatever the case may be. Mine specifically was from my first son, and I was living in the Outer Banks, and I was going to receive my maternal care at the small hospital there. And around 14 weeks, they noticed upon routine screening that I had antibodies in my blood, and they said, okay, it's nothing to worry about. And it didn't really sit well with me. So I really pushed to say, you know, can we follow up with this? I don't like that there's something there and it's just kind of like, don't worry about it. So upon my request, they did a repeat blood type and screen around 20 weeks and nothing came up at that moment. And so we continued on with the pregnancy and well checks as routine. At 37 weeks and 4 days, I was laying in bed with my husband and noticed that I didn't feel the baby moving. And I said to him, you know, can you go get me a cup of orange juice? Do all the things that they teach you to kind of increase fetal movements. And none of that was working. So I went to the hospital. And upon arrival, they said they couldn't find a heartbeat. I proceeded to, with my first son, ended up in emergency C-section, and I had really wanted to do a VBAC for this pregnancy. And I had an amazing nurse say to me, if you don't have a vaginal birth, you'll never have one in your life. Again, long story short, we went ahead and I went with a vaginal birth, and I labored for about 32 hours and ended up having my son, who was a stillbirth. And needless to say, it was traumatic and horrible. And when he came out, we had blood tests done, and little C antibody was detected at a level that stated too numerous to count, which told us that this antibody was pretty responsible for the demise. We went on to kind of a review at the hospital system, and they kept saying, no, it's fine. It was just kind of this fluke. Well, of course, that wasn't sitting well with me. So we went to Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. Ultimately, it was determined that little C antibody led to HDFN, which led to the anemia of my son and led to his death. And from there, we kind of just sat with it for a while. We did extensive testing. We did genetic testing, so we were able to rule out everything else. My husband got his type and screen done, and he was homozygous for little C as well, which told us that 100% of our next pregnancies, every baby would be affected by little C antibody because our blood was incompatible. And we took a little while to kind of see, you know, did we want to try again? Were we going to open ourselves up to that sort of heartache? And about 2 years later, we tried again. And Johns Hopkins said either them or EVMS in Norfolk was a really good facility. And one of the physicians there actually had written the book on some of the scans to help test with anemia. It's the MCA scan. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's an ultrasound that they do to test the baby's blood flow, the velocity of blood through the median cerebral artery. And through that, they can detect if the baby becomes anemic or not.
So you are convinced that the stillbirth of your son was directly related to your previous pregnancy?
Oh, that's how it happens. Because upon becoming pregnant, your blood mixes with your first child. That's why it can either happen with a blood transfusion or a previous pregnancy, whether it be a miscarriage or a full-term pregnancy. My son was a full-term. And during that time, the fetus blood and the mother blood mixes. And that is when you become sensitized and your body recognizes this antibody that I do not have in my blood as a foreign object and sends the antibodies out to destroy it. And upon sending the antibodies out, it essentially destroys specifically in the baby, the red blood cells, which causes the baby to become anemic, hence hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn.
Needless to say, you never heard of this condition before it affected you.
Oh, absolutely not. And I'm a nurse and I had never been exposed to anything. I never heard of it. The only thing within its realm that I had kind of heard of, like how you had mentioned the rhesus, was the RH. But all I had learned in nursing school and had ever been exposed to with other moms was the Rogam shot, which helps with specifically the RH. I didn't realize, and nobody had told me, and even upon knowing that there was a slight detection of antibodies at 14 weeks, nobody had said, oh, there's Kel, there's little C, there's big C, there's little D. I mean, the list goes on of these rare antibodies that can cause the HDFN to exist in the subsequent pregnancies.
So I'd like to ask the rarity of the condition. Do you suspect this is why none of your doctors had any clue that this was going on? Nobody knew.
Nobody knew. Yeah. And that's why at the end, when we were doing the investigation, the hospital still had been so unfamiliar with it. And when we finally sought care at Johns Hopkins, I had to go to a maternal fetal medicine specialist because of how rare it was. And so if you think about it, I was in North Carolina and I had to travel however many states, four states, to get to see somebody that was familiar, could diagnose it, and then send me to the appropriate person for care for my following pregnancy. Because I said, I can't travel 6 hours every time for my medical appointments. And it took that much. It took a year, a little over a year, to find somebody that knew what was actually going on.
And yet, it seems that the disease is more prevalent than we realize, right?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was really shocked about, because once... And it's one of those things I think you say, you don't notice it until you have it. And then you start seeing it all around you.
Yeah.
Once I found out about it and I got on Facebook and I started kind of doing my research and I talked to the doctor at Hopkins and he referred me to the doctor at EVMS. It was like, oh, okay, it is out there. You know, it's just like the knowledge was not spread. And so it seemed really rare. But once you find that group, I mean, I joined the Alloimmunization Network on Facebook and the moms were so well-versed. And there are hundreds of moms from all over the world that have it. And it was like I finally found my community. It wasn't little C, but it was those affected by HDFN. So it was still under kind of this larger umbrella.
So I'm going to quote from your website, from the article. It says that according to the Maternal Alloimmunization Foundation website, the disease is usually caused by previous exposure to a different blood type, typically from a previous blood transfusion or a previous pregnancy, and can be managed if it's caught. Mentions a legislation that was introduced in Congress. 22,000 stillbirth deaths occur nationally, and in North Carolina alone, in your state, there are close to 800 stillborn deaths per year. Just, if I may ask, what legislation is this all about? How does this affect you?
You know, it's just, like, tragic hearing those numbers. Initially, when I was affected, I got really... I delved deep into looking at the standard of care through the obstetrics and gynecology. And I just was kind of blown away that there was no standard of care saying, hey, if these antibodies are detected, either refer them to a specialist or do these follow-ups or follow it a little bit more closely. And I think now it's one of those things that the physicians' boards need to kind of reevaluate. You know, this is happening in large numbers and we need to have a change to kind of change the standard of care or reevaluate why it's being missed so much, because there's obviously a need. Honestly, for the first 3 years, I was just in a place of grief and now I'm finally getting out of it and talking to moms and reaching out to the group. And like I said, last year we donated about $6,000 to the Alloimmunization Foundation for research, and I know they're working with Janssen with one of the trial drugs. And so I feel like I'm in a place of baby steps right now still. The legislation is still on the back burner for me. So I'm not directly sure. I have to do more research on it.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. And of course, you've given birth to a little girl, right?
Yes, my rainbow baby, Eva.
So there is hope, of obviously. It's not all, you know, gloom and doom. There is some hope.
Absolutely, there's hope. But I will say with that, the maternal care, once we knew and once it was monitored, I was so relieved that somebody had their finger on the pulse, literally, at all times. But once I gave birth, the care after for Eva, it really seemed like it depended on who the physician was, who the nurse was, who the attending was, whatever realm, whoever we fell into, the plan changed day to day. And that's, I think, my biggest next piece that I would like to focus on, because having a daughter, she was in the NICU for just under 1 month due to the little C antibodies. And it was touch and go at times. She had to have blood transfusions. She was under the bilirubin lights pretty much 24/7. She had to have IVIG. It was just so scary. And nobody seemed to know what was what. And I think that's the part where we really need to focus as well.
So let me ask you a little bit about your charity. In the time we have left, what do you do and how does it work and what do you hope to accomplish?
Number one goal, just to show people there's hope. And if you have gone through a loss and you feel like you can't go on, you know, don't give up because you can. So definitely providing hope and support is my number one goal. The way we're doing that is I have set up with a clinical therapist to provide counseling free to members to my community, because when my son died, I was discharged with a bunch of papers and kind of just set on my way saying, good luck, you know, figure it out. And unfortunately, that's the American healthcare system and the mental healthcare system that we have at this time. And I have a supportive family. We have good insurance. And I could not find somebody to give me therapy. It was the darkest days of my life. And I thought, this is just so inhumane. I can't believe people have to do this. I don't ever want anyone to have to go through this. So we do a 5K every year. And that has been great to raise money to be able to pay for the therapy sessions.
Well, you're a runner, so it makes sense.
Yes. And that was kind of right at the beginning after my son died. He died in January. And again, I just sat in this group, didn't know what to do. So I started running and I did a 10K in April. And then from there on out, about every month or so, I started doing a 5K for organizations that meant something to me. And then finally, a couple years after my grief, I said, why am I doing this for other people? Like, my people need it, you know, people that have gone through losses, moms, families. So that's kind of where it came from. So we do the 5K and it's been huge turnout. I mean, the financial part has been great, but also I've had moms, just this year was the first year that we did virtual. So it's gotten spread a lot more. So now moms from all over Australia, different countries throughout the US reach out to me and tell me their story. And it's humbling. It's really just like,
you just had the run now, right?
Yeah, it was in October. So October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. So you'll usually see people do like a candlelight vigil or, you know, now with social media, post different things. There's different prayer sessions, events like that. And it was really important for me to host the run in October because I wanted something that during that time when you see all these things online, okay, it's really nice, but to have a group of people you can actually meet up with in person. I think the face-to-face is so important and it's getting lost a little bit nowadays. So it's held in October every year in the Outer Banks. We extend it virtually. A group of moms got together here in Melbourne. We had over 20-some people meet up and come together, support one another, meet one another. If you've been fortunate enough that you've never had a loss, then it's one of those things you don't really understand it. Of course, my family and everyone who was there supported us and it was great, but to have that connection really meant a lot. And then to have moms reach out has been phenomenal.
Erin, thank you so much. We're out of time. I appreciate you talking with us about something that's obviously very sensitive, but we feel it's important to get the story out. We've been speaking with Erin Collins, founder of the Chasing Rainbow Foundation in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Thank you very much. This is Larry Luxner.
Thank you so much.
This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.